Begin. So if we're starting tonight, that means we have 6 weeks until Hanukkah. That's very, very exciting. When Ephraim made the announcement, not Ephraim, Feder, Ephraim Noda made the announcement that we're learning the next 4 weeks of Gemara, Yoni Hanukkah, Rav Weinberg got very, very excited in his seat up front. So he felt the aura of Hanukkah coming. So we should all get very excited for Hanukkah and preparing of Amem HaLikin. So let's begin the second parak of Shabbos. Now, the question before we even begin, the poskim discuss why do we say Bamem HaLikin Friday nights? In Ashkenazi shuls growing up, that's what we always said in between. We don't have it here, but I think this Sfarim said also in between. So Nusach Sfarim, they don't say it, maybe they say it beforehand. I don't know if it's in the Siddur even, Bamem HaLikin. But for Ashkenazim and Sfarim, we say it in between Kabbal Shabbos and Marv. So what's so special about this Mishnah and Bamem HaLikin? So a number of different explanations are brought. One is to say that we fulfilled all the preparations of Neir Shabbos, so we did everything correct to say we fulfilled it. Others say slightly differently, we're just reminding ourselves what the halachas are of Neir Shabbos to be careful. And then the most interesting one is really, actually there are two. Magen Avraham writes that to give extra time for those who might come late. You might come late, and you're going to miss Baruch Hu. So to give 5 minutes for those guys who are a little bit lagging, this way they have a few extra minutes, so everyone learns for a couple of minutes reciting Mishnayos, and then the guys who come late can walk in for Baruch Hu. But the really most interesting one is the Chassam Sofer, based on a Ber Hetev, who quotes an Ari, that there is a minug to the first thing a person should, after saying Moda Ani in the morning and washing his hands and Birchas HaTorah, the first thing we say is a Mishnah. So why do we say Mishnah? So normally we say because Birchas HaTorah covers a Mishnah and Gemara. We try to cover all our bases and Psukim first, Psukim, Mishnah, and Gemara. But according to the Arizal, the idea is because we know why do we say Mishnayos to learn for Zeich and Nishmas of someone? Because the same letters, the same Osios of Mishnah and Neshama. So a person gets, he's restored back in the morning, his Neshama comes back. So we say Mishnah in the morning, connected the Osios. So along those lines, when a person gets his Neshama Yisera on Shabbos, right at the outset and onset of Shabbos, so we say a Mishnah, and one that's very connected to Neiros Shabbos, that's why we say Mishnayos of the second pair. Okay. So, let's begin this mission now. Now, this mission is quite technical, so those who have an art scroll, English art scroll, that is, feel free to tell me whatever any of these words might mean if you want, don't have to. We'll do the best we can without. So, the mission begins as follows. Bameh malikin uvameh ein malikin. With what types of materials can be used to light, and which ones can you not use to light? So lighting what? So there are two things we know when it comes to a candle. You obviously need a fire, you need a match. But that match needs to catch on to a wick. And it also needs fuel, needs oil. So a basic idea of a candle, there's a wick and then there's oil. So part of this mission is telling you which types of materials are disqualified for the wick. And part of the mission is disqualifying what cannot be used for the oil. So Rashi tells us, based on, we'll see in the Gemara on the bottom here, that the first part of the mission is telling us what's possible for a psila. What cannot be used for the wick? And that's as follows. Lo b'lechesh, you can't use that. V'lo b'chosen, v'lo b'chalach, v'lo b'psilas ha'idon, v'lo b'psilas ha'midbar, v'lo b'yeroka, shal p'nei ha'mayim. So the Gemara is going to go through each one, what exactly these materials are. And that's the list of what is disqualified for the psila, for the wick. Then the Mishnah says, v'lo Bezefes, below Beshava, below Beshemin Kik, below Beshemin Srefa, below Baalia, below Bechelov. None of these, wax and certain types of oils and fats, they can be used for the oil. Nacham Amadai Omer Malikin Bechelov Mavushal, he felt, and the Gemara will explain not today, though tomorrow we'll learn this together. He said you could use, if it's Chelov fats that's cooked, that would be permitted. But Chachamim argue and say, whether or not this chaylev has been cooked or not cooked, it's disqualified for being used for any of the oil. Okay, so the Gemara now goes one by one. What are these materials listed in the Mishnah? What's the first thing we mention? Lo b'lechesh. What's lechesh that cannot be used? So the Gemara explains, it's shucha de'arza. So shucha de'arza, is there a definition of the word shocha?
Bark.
Okay, the bark of a cedar tree. So Gemara says, shocha d'arza, eitz bamu, that's wood. Of course you can't use wood for the wick. And so the Gemara explains, ha bamranisa d'izbe. Now, if you actually remove the bark from the wood, there's some type of woolly material in between there, and that could be used to make a wick. And the Gemara is telling us that that type of wick cannot be used. So I don't know if you remember this, Mikey, but we went on a trip. I don't know if this was on Sulam or Hakotel trip or somewhere, But I remember going somewhere, and the tour guide took a tree. I don't know if it's a cedar tree, and he broke it off and shows there's some like wool look like inside in between the trees. I don't know if I'm making that up. You remember that? I'm sure others have seen that maybe before. No, just me. Okay, well, it's a Gemara. And if you haven't, so the Gemara says there's some type of wool material in between the bark and the tree. So that type of wool that can, in theory, be made into a wick is disqualified for, what was the smile? Because I went to Sulam, is that why? Okay, fine.
Everyone
so the
wasn't interested in the tree.
Oh, I understand. Okay. Very good. So that type of wool material that's found between the bark and the tree is not allowed to be used for this type of wick, for the candle of Shabbos. The Gemara then says, what about v'lo b'chosen? What exactly is a chosen? So Gemara explains, Amar Rav Yosef, nu'res, it's a nu'res, shapisham, which is it's like wood chips of the flax tree. How do they define that?
T-O-W,
okay, doesn't help me out. Okay, I think it's like wood chips of a flax tree. I don't really know what a flax tree looks like, but some of the materials that come from a pishtan tree. So the Gemara says, Amar le, Abai, challenges Rav Yosef, haksiv, doesn't the pasuk tell us, v'haya, it's a pasuk that appears in Yeshayahu, v'haya hechason l'no'ares. And we see clearly that the word chason and nu'ores are two different things. It can't be the same thing. So you can't define chosen as nu'ores. So therefore, Abai rejects it. And Ela Amar Baye, kisna didayik v'lo nafitz. What it's referring to really is kisna, which is pishon, it's flax. And the process of taking the pishon and processing it into clothing, it goes through three stages. First, it has to be soaked in water. The Gemara talks about this in the first parak of Shabbos, that you let the pishon yora, you let it shore, be yora shamayim, let it soak in water, it gets very soft. I had something like this once. I have all these stories in the past in my trips. I thought I mentioned all of them, I guess not. So when I was in Shana Bays, so I was my parents and my little brother came to visit me, and they took us to Cairo. We went to Cairo in Mitzrayim, and we had connections with what's his name in the horse? What's the horse name?
American Pharaoh.
So him. We had connections with American Pharaoh, the owner. And he hooked us up, took us, we went to Cairo, he wasn't there, but he arranged us to go to Cairo. We took a Al Ahly flight when things were safer, but even though things were safer then, we were told we can't wear anything that has English letters or Hebrew letters for that matter. No indication that we were either Jewish or American, just tourists, so we wore whatever we wore in a baseball cap. And we went on a plane with just real Arabs wearing the whole garb. And the second we landed in Egypt, the security guards came to us and took us and threw us into a bulletproof limousine. And he took care of, we didn't pay for a thing. He just mavish took care of everything. We went to this limousine and we went to some hotel he set us up at. So then the next day we went on a trip on the Nile River, which is fascinating. We had a boat ride on the Nile River. And then from there we went to the pyramids. So along the way to the pyramids, it's a very far drive from the city. So we stopped off at some place which showed you how to make papyrus paper. And it's the same idea where you have to take papyrus, the type of the first paper I think that was invented, and some type of reed that you soak in water first, and then it goes through some chemical process by soaking in the water and ends up hardening, and then you use it as paper. So anyways, that reminds me of pishon because it gets soaked in water also. So anyways, you take this pishon and you soak it in water. That's the first stage of the process. Now, after you soak it in the water, the next step is you have to start pressing it. You crush it in such a way where you flatten it. But then there's a third process where you then take a comb and you have to scrape it. And I guess, I don't know, maybe it straightens it further. Maybe it makes it into lines or strings. I don't know exactly. But there are three stages in making the transforming the pishon into some type of clothing. So now what Abai is saying here is when we're talking about chosin in the Mishnah, it's talking about kisna, this flax that's didayik v'lo nafitz. It was soaked in water. It was then crushed and flattened, but never went through the process of nuffets. It never went through the process of combed. It wasn't combed yet. So that wasn't through that stage yet, and that's what we're referring to is disqualified for being used as a wick. Okay, further now, I told you, this first almond is very technical. After this, the rest of the parak is a little bit more exciting. So the Gemara then says, v'lo b'kalach. You can't use a chalach either. What's chalach? The Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Shaltinu l'chol nachosa yama. Shmuel had asked all the sailors, the ones who are familiar with different types of things out there in the sea, and v'amrili, they said to me, kulcha shmei. It's something called kulcha, whatever that is. It didn't help him much. What's kulcha? That's, you could go find it. It exists. But Rav Yitzchak bar Zeira amar gushkara. It's actually called gushkara, which Rashi explained. If you look at Rashi, gushkara is psola shel meshi ha'asoy kekovayim. So it's the leftovers from silk. Meshi silk. So leftovers of silk. Vahu base hatolas. It comes from the stomachs of these types of worms, I think, right? And it's menoftsin oso v'tove. You comb it and you make it into strings. V'osemi menu begin. And you can make it into silk clothing, like we know. V'osalasos mimena psila. But even though it's a very nice material, very fancy material, it's disqualified for being used as a wick. Kedamar b'chol psule psilos. The masnisin, like all the other disqualified wicks, sheha'or misachseches behen v'kofetzes v'nefsekes. The fire jumps; it doesn't stay on; it flickers. V'ein hashalheves omedes bimkoma, and the flame doesn't remain stationary. And that's not the type of candle we want to be using on Shabbos. So therefore, it's disqualified. Now, there is a debate whether or not this, when the first opinion of Shmuel called it a kulcha, is a kulcha the same thing as gushkara? They're just different names, they both mean silk. The Gra thinks that kulcha is something different. There's actually a machlokas. Everybody agrees gushkara is silk, but according to the Gra and the Ramam, the definition of kulcha really is some type of, I think, moss that grows on rocks that are near the water. They call it moss, is that what they say? Okay, something like that. Some green moss that grows on the stones that are near the sea. If you go near the docks, you see these green things that grow, like kind of like algae. That's what, according to the Gra and the Ram, this material is of kolcha, and it's disqualified to be used. Now, there's an interesting question that comes up. It's a side point, but it's very interesting nonetheless. That Rashi defines that this gushkara is silk. And the Gemara Menachos that we spoke about on Sunday, making tzitzis from different types of materials, so we said that everyone agrees that silk material you could use as tzitzis, part of tzitzis, machlok is whether it's deraisa or whether it's derabanan, but silk is a beged, you can make it out of tzitzis. You can use silk to make tzitzis. So the question that the Achronim ask is, the Chassam Sofer asks the question, silk, if it comes from a worm, that means it's not kosher. Okay, well, no one's eating tzitzis anyway, so who cares if it's kosher or not kosher? So there's a halacha that says, Laman tiyah Torah Hashem b'ficha. The pasuk tells us in the context of tefillin, what do we learn from Laman tiyah Torah Hashem b'ficha? That you can only make tefillin out of something that's mutter r'ficha. That only something that's edible, that's kosher, are you allowed to make tefillin. So tefillin has to come from kosher animals. It comes from a cow. The box is leather. Everything in the tefillin is all leather. And the sinews, the string they use, is all part of the kosher animal. You can't use a pig or any other non-kosher animal for the tefillin.
Not
so,
a shechted animal.
What?
Not a shechted animal.
It doesn't have to be shechted, no. But just a kosher animal. So it could come from a nevela. So the Chassam Sofer asks, so then how could you use silk for tzitzis? Doesn't tzitzis have the same din as tefillin? It has to come saying mutter b'ficha, saying that's kosher. And silk isn't kosher since it comes from a worm. So that's the question of the Chassam Sofer. And what his answer is that no. The only time you have the concept of mutter b'ficha, that the material has to come from something that's kosher to be eaten, is when you're making something that's davar shebekedusha, tashmishe kedusha, as opposed to tashmishe mitzvah. We've discussed this in the past. Tashmishe kedusha is any mitzvah that has shem Hashem in it. So tefillin, sefer Torah, mezuzah, those are tashmishe kedusha, and that has to come from something that's mutter b'ficha, a kosher animal. Something like tzitzis or any other type of mitzvah that doesn't have a Shem Hashem in it is allowed to come from a non-kosher animal, so you can use silk for making of tzitzis. Now, fascinating, the Ran says a shofar has to come from a kosher animal because mutter b'ficha. But that's very strange because shofar doesn't say Shem Hashem anywhere. It would be l'chora be a tashmishe mitzvah. So you should be able to use a horn or shofar from any other non-kosher animal. So the Ran says that since based on the Gemara tells us that shofar is kibifnim dami, that the shofar takes your tefillahs inside the Kodesh Kodashim, it's zichron ba'alma, it's supposed to remind the Kodesh Baruch Hu, in the inside, it's considered a tashmishe kedusha and mlecha shemayim, so the shofar would be in the same list as Sefer Torah, Mezuzah, Megillah, tefillin, that has to come from something that's kosher, as opposed to the tashmishe mitzvah, which is going to be titus or whatever else might be on that list, sukkah, things like that. That's the chiddush of the Chassam Sofer. I know it's very meaningful for those who blow the shofar here. It means a lot. So I'll give you a little bit more, maybe next year's Yashra. Okay, next year, Josh, we'll talk about that.
No extra
pressure. We need no more pressure. This year you handled it fine. Okay. So now the other suggestion, the Nezer Kodesh, he makes another suggestion as to why Titus doesn't have to come from a sign that's kosher animal. He says only something that needs to come from an animal. As opposed to Titus doesn't need to come from an animal. It could come from wool, or rather linen, which grows from the ground. So once you could choose even inedible things, so then even if you're taking the track of an animal, that could be a non-kosher animal. As opposed to Sefer Torah, Tefillah, Mezuzah has to come from an animal, so an animal has to be a kosher animal. But again, Titus, we already are broadening the options to use even things that are inedible, like linen, so therefore there are no limitations of what could be used for the beged of a Titus, even if it means a non-kosher source. Okay, let's go weiter now. The Gemara says, last few lines of the narrow lines, Rabin v'abai havi yosvi kamei diravana nechemya. They were once sitting in front of Rabbi Nechemya, who was Achua the Reish Lakish, the brother of Reish Lakish, and Chazi the Havi Lavish Mitachsa. And they saw that Rabbi Nechemya, who was close to the Reish Galusa, which meant he had a lot of money, so he was wearing a Tachsa. What's Tachsa? Rashi says, Lavish Ha'asri Mioso Kalach. It was material from Kalach that's mentioned here in the Mishnah, silk, something fancy. So the Gemara says, Amarle Rabin Labaye, Hainuklach de Tanan. They see Rabbi Nechemya walking around in the fancy silk, and they apparently have never seen this before, so he says to Abaye, look, that's that kalach that the Mishnah is referring to in Bamem Alikin, that's that silk. So Amarle, so he says back to him, Anan Shira Parnada Karinale. We call this material Shire Parnada. That's the name of it. Okay, doesn't sound like there's a machlokas here, just different terms of the same object. So the Gemara says, is that really true? Is it the same thing that Kalach and Shirai Parnada are the same thing? Meisive, the Brisa clearly says, Hashiraim, which is the same thing right now, Shira Parnada. Shiraim is silk, silk remnants. Vakalach is something else. Vasirikin is something else, not our concern right now. Chayav and Betzitzis. These materials are Chayav and Betzitzis. Now, the fact that they list Shiraim and Kalach separately tells us that Kalach is not Shiraim. Shiraim is silk, and Kalach is something like moss, something different. So Gemara says it's a tiyufta. So Gemara says no. Ibai seima shira lechud v'shira parnada lechud. Shira is one type of material. Shira parnada is a different type of material. So kalach is shira parnada and shira is something else. I don't know if they're giving definitions for these things.
Paranda. Yeah.
Okay, it's some place. Okay, different places of silk. Okay, different worms, I guess. So that's the difference. So there's an interesting Tosa. Look at Tosa's Dibra Maschil Anan Shira Parnada Karinan Le Perish Abeno Tam De Kalach De Masnisin Karinan Shira Parnada. Our Mishnah Kalach is referring to Shira Parnada. Aval Metaksa, that Metaksa that Rabbi Nechemya was wearing, that was Lav Hainu Shira Parnada. That was just Stam Shira. That was a regular silk. It wasn't the fancy silk of Parnada silk. Why? How does he know this? De Lo Havi Acher Churban. Because they didn't have Shira Parnada didn't exist after Churban Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Nechemya, the brother of Reish Lakalusa, this story in Rabin Abaye, they all lived after the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And they didn't have Shira Parnada wasn't found after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Because as the Gemara tells us in Sota, the end of Sota, Daf Memches, Mishechara Beis Hamikdash, Batil Shamir, Vizechuchis Levana, Vishira Parnada. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we lost that special shamir, that worm that was able to chisel through any type of stone. And the Zechuchas Levana, this special white glass, is no longer. And the Shira Parnada, this special silk, also wasn't found. So the fact that he's wearing this tachza, this silk, and he's after the Beis HaMikdash, must be it's not Shira Parnada, not the silk Parnada, but it was just regular silk that he was wearing. So then Tosa says, according to Ri, he argues and says no. Mifarish dekai nami atachsa. No, even the tachsa that he was wearing could have been made of the Shir Parnada. Ah, but doesn't the Gemara say after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Shir Parnada didn't exist anymore, so how could he be wearing it? V'had dekamer hasan batil, that which the Gemara in Tota says it was batil. You can't find Shir Parnada anymore. Lo legamrei batil doesn't mean it didn't exist anywhere. Ela shlo haya nimtza kol kach. It wasn't commonly found anymore. It exists in the world. It wasn't completely gone from the world. It was just rare. How does he know this? Dehazuchuches levana ha'isa acher churban. We still find cases that you can still find white glass all over the place. It just might not be as easy to find anymore, but it still exists. So too, Shira Parnada, even though it was hard to come by, it still did exist, and it's very possible that Rabbi Nechemiah, who was the brother of the Reish Galusa, had access to such a fancy type of silk. Okay, the Gemara now says further, with the two eye lines down, the Gemara says, what's vlo psila ha'idan? What does that mean? So the Gemara explained, that is achavina. Rashi says achavina is a type of arava, and v'yesh kemin semer bein klipal eitz. Apparently, if you take off the between the stem and the inside, the tree and the branches of the bark, you find some type of woolly material there that can be used as a wick. And the Gemara is telling, the Mishnah tells us that cannot be used either for a wick for Shabbos. So the Gemara then says, Rabin v'abaye hava ka'azli bepiksa ditam moririsa. They're walking in some valley in this area. Chazina lahanu arbasa. The Ivan the Hagos Sinum that changes it to an ayin, arvasa. They saw a certain arava tree. They saw an arava tree. And Amale Rabin says to Abaye, again, the same conversation. Rabin was very attuned to these things. So Rabin says to Abaye, Hainu Eden Ditan. That's the Eden that the Mishnah and Bamem Alikin discusses, that arava tree. So Amarle Hahi Eitz Bamo. He looks at it and he says, what do you mean? That's a tree. No one can use that as a wick. What are you talking about? That's not the Eden. So then he goes over, Rabin, Kalif, he rips off the bark, Vach Vele, he shows in the Amarnisa, the Beni Ben, he shows a little woolly material that in between the bark and the tree. So that's the Arava tree that has this Eden. Gemara then says, V'lo b'ptilas ha-midbar shavra. Shavra, Rashi says, is some type of min ace arav, arach, a long type of grass. The Karnoso artia, I don't know what that means, any?
Nettle.
Nettle, okay. Fine, some type of long grass. And then the Gemara says further, "Velo biyroka shal pnei amayim." You can't use some green things that grow on the water. So what does it mean, "mayhi"? Ilam, if this means uchamta dechariza, it's referring to, as Rashi explains here, some where the makom kanis, where if it's a mayim, if there's a stagnant body of water, and gadalem kemin yakrokus, like type of algae, like green algae that grows on stagnant bodies of water. If you ever drive, if you ever take a bike ride, I know Shmuley goes there. If you go to the back by Hewlett Bay Harbor, that's what it's called, right? So you pass by that little pond there, you know, over that bridge before you get to the further bridge. So then on the left side of that pond that has the water going up, it's disgusting. It has all this algae growing there. It's very gross. I wouldn't want to jump in there, but that's a stagnant body of water. It's a pond where if it's not moved at all, this type of bacteria or fungi grow on it. That's algae. So if that's what's referring to, that the Yeroka shall pneamayim, that green algae that's growing on the water, well, that's obviously not going to be an effective wick, because the Gemara says, ifruche mifarchin, that's cracks. You can't make it into a wick. You try to put it together, they don't stick to each other. Just pieces of algae. So that can't be what the Mishnah is referring to. That can't be made into a wick. Ela amar rav papa ucham te darva. It's a different type of algae. They define, is this algae, is that the word they're using, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. So it's algae that grows on the boat. I guess the different types of algae that grow on bodies of water versus on the boats. So apparently the algae that grows on the side of a boat that remains in the water is more effective for making a wick. So that can be made as a wick, but the Mishnah says it's disqualified for being used as a wick because the flame won't catch well on it. Okay. Gemara now says, Tana, the Brisa, that's Hosifu Aleyan, Shel Tzemer, Vishel Seyar. The Mishnah says, the Brisa rather adds, there are other types of materials that also, I'm not sure adding to be used, adding that can't be used.
Disqualified.
So, Semer, you cannot use a wool type of wick, nor can you use one made of hair. So the Gemara says, Tana Didan, our Mishnah, why didn't our Mishnah include Seyar and Semer? Because Semer, Michlas Chavitz, it's going to shrink and I guess wither away if you try to light it. And Rashi explained, because of the fire, it's not going to catch fire. The flame won't stand. So there's not even a shaila that you would even think to use wool. And with respect to the seyar, ichruche michrach, it's going to get singed also, and it's not going to catch the flame. So that's too obvious for the Mishnah to have to address tzemer and seyar. Gemara then says further, v'lo b'zefes. Zefes is, what's the word? Look, what is it?
Is it pitch?
It's a pitch? Did I say pitch? Okay. I thought it was some type of tar, pitch type of tar, no?
Yeah.
Fine, so we'll let Zephes. Zephes is Zipsa Shava Kirusa, which they say is the leftover of the, I think, beeswax, right?
Wax.
Just regular wax, but I think from honey, from I think from bees. So let's see. So that's this pitch or this tar type of material comes from the wax from the bees. So they get into a whole discussion, by the way, whether or not wax is something you're allowed to eat or not. I discussed the idea of dvash matzah Shabbos, honey. So the Gemara itself talks about in Maseches Becharos, why you're allowed to eat dvash? It comes from a bee. Bee is, of course, aser to eat. So if anything hayotze mina aser. If something comes from a davar aser, it itself is aser. So milk from a pig, you can eat milk, drink milk, because it comes from a pig. Milk from a cow, you can, because hayotze mina mutter, yotze mina aser. So how come we could have dvash if it comes from a bee, which is aser to eat? So the Gemara has a pasuk and goes back and forth that it really doesn't come from the bee, maybe it comes from the pollen, it just gets processed through the bees. Either way, the pasuk clearly says you're allowed to have dvash. Otherwise, the pasuk wouldn't speak about eretz dvash chala dvash. If dvash wasn't anything that you could eat, so then what would be the heter for it? So the pasuk praises the dvash in eretz Israel, and they talk. So some say date honey, very good. Some say it's referring to date honey. So Gemara goes back and forth about this, very good. And at the end of the day, dvash is permitted. But what about wax? It doesn't say wax is permitted. So some poskim say you can't eat wax. So that means, you know, when you get these shiny apples from the supermarket, those are usually very much shined with wax. That's what makes them look so nice and juicy, because they have wax. So you have to wash them off first if you really think that's treif. But most poskim say, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that it's not edible. Nothing to even talk about. It's like eating dirt. You don't need a hashgacha on dirt. There's no pasuk that says dirt is kosher, not kosher. And to even get the question off the ground, it has to be edible. Wax is not considered edible. And some poskim, they talk about it when they would eat dvash on Rosh Hashanah, they'd eat the honeycomb with it as well, the wax material as well, just to eat it. Why not? But it's not something that's considered edible and doesn't have it's not even a shaila whether it's treif. People have braces. They put wax in the back of their mouth. It could be they could swallow it. If it was treif, we wouldn't be putting it in the mouth. So we poskim that wax is actually not a problem. Fine. The Gemara then sends the last three lines here. Tana ad kan pasul psilos. So up until the word zephes, that was a discussion of what's pasul with regards to the wicks. Mikan ve'elach, from this point on, the rest of the Mishnah's list is psul shemanim, referring to what's disqualified for the oil, to fuel the flame. So the Gemara says, pshita, that's very, very obvious, because who could ever try to make you can't turn fat into a wick or oil. Oil can never be made into a wick. So that was such an obvious transition. Why does the Gemara have to tell us that it's transitioning from wicks to oils? That was too obvious. So the Gemara says, Shava itzrichle, because there's a hava mina by the wax. Mal desema lipsilos nami lo chazia kamashmalan. So this is a very, very tricky statement right here. Hard to read it, but the pasha pshat is that the Mishnah lists Shava wax as a disqualification for the oil. You can't use it to have the oil to fuel. If you wanted to use it as a wick, but there's going to be oil, you make a wick out of wax and you stick it into olive oil, let's say, so then you might think that would be disqualified as well. Kamash Mlan, you are allowed to use a candle as long as there's oil around it fueling. That's where the Gemara concludes this simple reading. So look at Tosa, what Tosa writes now. Based on this, you're only allowed to use a wax candle if there's oil around it, that the oil's fueling it, but you're only using the candle, the wax, as the wick, not as the fuel. So Tosa writes, this is very, very important. Those of you whose wives use wax, my wife does use wax for her candles. So Tosa writes here, B'nei Narvun, I don't know who that is, people from this area, Osrin Ner Shava Shalanu. They disqualify the use of our types of candles. Our candles, you take a candle, you put it in, or a tea light, which is wax. I think it's wax, no? Or is it dry wax that turns to oil? I think it's wax. So those things are usher to be used because you cannot use wax as oil. You can only use wax as a wick as long as there's oil around that wax. But there's a complicated Tosa. You can read it inside. He has a whole new way to read the Gemara here. The last two lines of Tosa says, Elevadai ki lo hanyech b'shemen nami shari. Even if you use a wax candle without oil, it's still permitted. In the end of the day, we paskin, you are allowed to use wax candles for Neir Shabbos, but that's based on this discussion here and how to read this Gemara exactly. Okay, let's read a little bit further now. The Gemara says the very last line, Amar Rami Bar Avin, Atrana Psulta Desifta. Atrana, was that listed in the Mishnah? I don't think it was listed in the Mishnah, right? So Atrana is the leftover of Zifta. Rashi explains, La'acha sheyotzei ha-zefes min ha'eitz, after you extracted the zefes, the pitch, from the tree, zavi menu ayde ha'or, it's going to flow further from the fire, psolas tzlul kishemen. There's going to be some clear liquid that's going to ooze out afterwards, kind of like oil, v'hu itron. That's the definition of itron. And then shava is psulta ledvosha. Like I mentioned before, that wax is the leftover of honey. After you've eaten all the honey, so those honeycombs are left over. That's the wax that we're referring to in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, l'may nafkamina. Who cares about all these definitions of what exactly wax is? And the Gemara explains, because lemekach u'memkar. The person wants to be selling you shava, so he expects, if I'm advertising I'm selling wax, that means I'm selling the wax which comes from the honeycombs, and that's just for clarity of what you're selling, as opposed to wax from some other source. Let's read a little further now onto Chaf Aleph and Aleph, just to get extra time. Why not? Gemara, I'm not going to go too far down though. Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Kol Elu Shamru, all the things listed in the Mishnah, we said, Ein Malikin Ben B'Shabbos, we don't light on Shabbos, Aval Osin Men Medura. Although you can't use them as single candles, to make a bonfire on them, Bein L'Shamim Kinegda, Bein L'Shamish La'ora, whether you're making a bonfire, this is of course on Erev Shabbos. I was asked this question once. This goes back, I think 6 years ago, someone called me, I was away at someone's Ufra for the hotel. And he asked me about it was a big snowstorm, yeah, it's a big blizzard. So he was asking me what the halachas are, is mamish 10 minutes before Shabbos, about keeping the fireplace running through Shabbos. So I said, I know there's a mefurish siman about this, and everything has to be caught fire. You have to make sure everything's lit beforehand, at least rove of the wood. That's all I was able to remember afterwards. But you are allowed to leave a fireplace running throughout Shabbos as long as you follow the halachas. The halachas are not that much. I think really all it is, as long as most of the wood there is caught fire, you could just let it go the rest of Shabbos. So although you can use these types of oils and candles for individual candles, but to make a big madura, a big bonfire out of these types of wicks, the algae, the moss, whatever we were talking about before, that is permitted. Whether or not the madura that you're making is l'schamim, is in order to heat up the house, kinegda, or bein l'shamish lower, just to light up your living room, to read, to learn from, bein agabe karka, whether the bonfire is on the floor somewhere and in the fireplace, bein agabe kira, maybe it's on the stovetop. Either way, you're allowed to use these things as part of the bonfire. I think the Gemara later on in the Amid is going to discuss why there's a difference. So then the Gemara says, v'lo asu ela lasas mem psila l'ner bavad. The only time we disqualified the wicks listed in the Mishnah was only when you're having them as individual candles, but again, as a big bonfire, one is allowed to combine them together. Let's read a little bit further now. The Gemara says, v'lo b'shem and kik, we said you can't use this type of oil for shem and kik. My shem and kik, what exactly is this? Answers the Gemara, Amar Shmuel, Shal Tinu L'chol Nachusayama. Again, Shmuel was very accustomed to talking to the sailors, so he had inquired from them, what exactly is the Shemin Kik? V'amrili, and they told me, Of Echad Yesh B'Kark Hayam V'Kik Shemo. There's a certain bird that's out there, and it's called a kik, and I guess apparently it must have some type of fat or oil that's between its skin and body, that can be used to as oil. That's the oil that cannot be used. Rav Yitzchak Braid, Rav Yehuda Amar, Mishcha de Kaza. Which Rashi explains here, four lines down from the top. Mishcha dekaza, shemen she'osin mi garine tzemer gefen. From cotton seed, right? Tzemer gefen is cotton. So garine tzemer gefen is cotton seed. Shakorin cotton, as Rashi says in French. So it's oil that's extracted cotton seed oil. That's what it's referring to. That cannot be used for the shemen of Ner Shabbos. Reish Lakish Amar kikayon diyona. It's a certain type of yona. It's ke'en osa shayona, like a yona, but it's a kikayon yona. Is there a definition of what type of dove it is?
I thought yona is kikayon. Yona is kikayon.
Yeah,
the tree.
Plant
from
yona. Oh, it's referring to that tree. Ah. Oh, the osa shayona, the one that's in sefer yona, that's referring to. Okay, fine. So then the Gemara says, Amaraba bar barchana li didi chazi li kikayon de yona. I saw kikayon de yona. I don't know if he saw the actual one or the one that Yonah couldn't, because that withered away, so that didn't exist. So he saw the kikayon that Yonah had, ulitzluvne dmei, dami, and vimidba. Say it again? Okay, some type of plant. Umidipashki rebi. Rashi says it was growing on a lake or a swamp of some sort. And val pum chanusa madlan yasei. On the edge of the stores, they would grow to create shade and good smell, Rashi explained. That's where you could find these kikayon dionas. umafratidu of the mashre, and from the seed you could produce oil, ubanfuye nichan kobriche de marava. And what from the branches, you could, what's the last line? You could smell it all in the west. They use it as some type of scent, I think.
It helped people who were sick.
Okay. So that's the kikai and the yonah. Let's go a few more lines here, then we'll stop here. Amar Rabba, psilo sh'amru chachamim ein malikin behem b'shabbos. The list of wicks you can't use on Shabbos. What's the reason why you can't use those wicks? Mipnei she'or misachseches ben, because the flame jumps and it flickers, and we want them to be calm. Rashi explains lashon misachseches is kimin sakin peguma, like a knife with a jagged end, the edge here. Misachseches bebasar, it creates these jagged lines in the meat, I guess. And she'ain oro zakuf, the flame doesn't stay straight, tall. But noach b'malk me'echad, ela nidach v'kofit. It jumps and moves, it flickers. That's the lashon of misach seches. And the shmanim shamru, the oils that are listed in the Mishnah that we can use, amru, chachamim ein malikin ben mipnei she'ain nimshachin achar psila. Because the oil doesn't catch on to the wick very well, and it's not going to fuel the fire for a very long time. And Rashi says, v'aslahatos, you might come then to turn the candles to try to get the oil to get on the wick more, and that's going to be a problem of havara, or mechaba, as you adjust the oil. So now you're putting the oil closer to flame, that's havara. If you're having the oil move away from the flame, you're taking away, detracting from the flame, that's a problem of mechaba. So for that reason, if the oil doesn't really catch on to the wick very well, that's why we disqualified all the shemans listed in the Mishnah. Okay, we'll stop here, and Mitzvah Shem will pick up tomorrow from this spot. Mm-hmm.